I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. President Trump has made Law and Order the dominant message of his reelection campaign, claiming a vote for Biden and the Democrats will give, quote, free rein to violent anarchists, agitators, and criminals who threaten our citizens. Biden has repeatedly condemned the violence, saying that looting and rioting and setting fires are not protesting. Meanwhile, Trump called a caravan of supporters lobbing paintballs and pepper spraying Portland protests great patriots, and refused to condemn Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old charged with homicide for killing two people in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Earlier this summer, heavily armed officers dressed in camouflage and using unmarked vehicles detained protesters in Portland. And in June, peaceful protesters in front of the White House were forcefully cleared off the streets by police and government forces for a presidential photo op. We are at a pivotal juncture, a deeply divided and angry and anxious country. We invited Jason Stanley to be our guest today on Radio Times. He's a professor of philosophy at Yale University. His 2018 book, How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them, is now out in paperback. And Jason Stanley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me on this terrific show.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And let's begin with this word fascism. It gets bandied about. It's what your book is about. It's got this horrific history, as we all know, associated with Hitler, with the Holocaust. How do you define what fascism is?
Fascism is a cult of the leader who promises national restoration in the face of a supposed humiliation and ruin threatened by immigrants, minorities, and leftists, usually communists and socialists. The fascist leader creates panic and fear about a takeover by Marxists who are encouraging minorities to a race war and presents himself as the only possible solution.
We can associate that, obviously, with the 1930s leading up to the war and the Holocaust. When you see fascism today, and you write about the United States, you also write about Brazil and other countries as well, what has set the stage, you think, for the kind of movement that we are seeing?
Well, many things. I mean, in the first instance, we've had both political parties demagoguing on race for generations. I mean, super predator theory in the 1990s, an entire justice system devoted to sort of over-policing minority black Americans. And each election seems to turn on this. Again, we're having this again now. Also, remember, the United States was an inspiration for Hitler. Hitler in Mein Kampf says that the United States is his model for a national state in Germany. America's race laws, the Jim Crow laws, was the inspiration for the Nuremberg laws, as Jim Whitman points out in his book, Hitler's American Model. The Nazi jurists studied our race laws, our anti-miscegenation laws. The Nuremberg laws, remember, forbade marriages between Germans and Jews and stripped citizenship from non-Aryan Germans and communists. So the Ku Klux Klan is in the literature on fascism, often called the first fascist organization. When the fascist groups arose in Italy, they were, Sarah Churchwell describes in her book, they were regularly described as a kind of Italian Ku Klux Klan. Wow. So the white supremacy of America is at the basis of what we see today and the politics we see today.
In fact, you're right that fascism is not a new threat in this country, as you just said, but rather a permanent temptation.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the plot against America, HBO is showing a series based on Philip Roth's novel about the America First movement. President Trump's movement, he appropriated the language of American fascism. Charles Lindbergh was, we know from documents that Charles Lindbergh was someone the Nazis thought of could be a potential American Führer.
Are there right-wing and left-wing, then, fascist ideologies or groups or movements?
No. Authoritarianism is a broad term. There are left-wing authoritarian movements. There are communist authority. There was Mao. There was Stalin. There's China. There's Cuba. Though China is becoming increasingly nationalist and hence fascist. But so there's left-wing authoritarianism. Left-wing authoritarianism has killed as many people, more people, I would say, than right-wing authoritarianism, certainly just as many people. So there's left-wing authoritarianism, but it's not fascism. Fascism is a very particular thing. Think of Pastor Martin Niemöller's famous poem on the side of the Holocaust Museum. This is the version on the side of the Holocaust Museum. First they came for the socialists, but I said nothing because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, labor unions, but I said nothing because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, but I said nothing because I was not a Jew. Finally, they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. We learn from this poem that fascism targets socialists and communists, labor unions, and minorities. So that's fascism. Communist authoritarianism can be just as bad as fascism, but it's a different thing, and you need to recognize it differently. Now, the way fascist politics works is you make people afraid of communist authoritarianism. So there are plenty of good-hearted social conservatives. Social conservatism is no kind of fascism at all. Religious conservatism is not fascism. But what you do is you say to social conservatives and religious conservatives, the communists are coming. The radical Marxists are coming. They're trying to promote a race war. They're going to end your religious freedom. You need us to protect you. We're not like you. We use methods you wouldn't. We might have had many marriages. You know, the original communist, we might use violence that's not compatible with Christianity, but we're going to protect you. We're your strongmen. There's a speech that Goebbels gives, Communism with its Mask Off, where he says, in 1935, Joseph Goebbels is the propaganda minister for the Nazi Party. And Goebbels says, the Bolsheviks are coming. The Bolsheviks are in cahoots with a criminal underworld. They're lawless. They're here to take your religion away. They're going to destroy civilization. They're going to destroy Western civilization. Hitler is the protector of Western civilization, Goebbels says. And he says, you know, Hitler might not be just like you, but he's going to protect you from the communists. That's fascism.
Well, let me pick up and summarize here. So fascism is an ideology based on things like loyalty, a sense of victimhood, a mythic past that's better than the present, lies and propaganda, fear of the other, law and order, and this cult of leader. So that I think in a nutshell is what you're saying about fascism. So going from the 1930s to today and to our president, how do you see him?
Well, so there's just some other elements as well. Like, so you've listed some of the 10 chapters of my book, but one element we're seeing very strongly is chapter 9, which is Sodom and Gomorrah. So even though it's fake and part of the propaganda, the idea is that the cities are filled with disease, the cities are filled with foreigners, they're burning and lawless, and the real people of the nation come from the countryside. So that's just an important element in today's context. So my book was published in 2018, 2 years ago,
right.
2 years ago
right.
This month. And my book is about fascist politics. But we've seen increasingly movement into policy. We're seeing movement. We're seeing not just fascist propaganda and rhetoric. We are seeing the Trump administration employ clearly authoritarian means. We see a takeover of one of our two great political parties. Hannah Arendt in The Origins of Totalitarianism talks about the danger of politicians favoring party over parties. And by what that means, she says, the first step towards fascism is when or authoritarianism of any kind is when one political party declares the other political party illegitimate and says that ruling is their party is the only legitimate party that can rule. The other party is just traitorous. So we've seen that for a long time in the Republican Party, and Arendt warns the next step after that is for that party to be transformed into a cult of the leader, to be just about their leader. And so what we see with Trumpism is a complete transformation of the Republican Party. First, with leaders like Newt Gingrich, it was about condemning the Democrats as just traitors, and now we see the RNC, the platform was just whatever Donald Trump says. Four of the six speakers at the RNC convention were Trumps. Well, who spoke more than 10 minutes? Four of the six speakers who spoke more than 10 minutes were Trumps. That is incredibly dangerous. So we are seeing, the Department of Homeland Security talk about targeting political opponents. leaders of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, whatever that is. You know,
yeah, we're not sure yet.
Of Antifa. So we're seeing militias. People, when I published my book in 2018, people would push back, giving a set of arguments that we're not seeing fascism. And each one of those arguments we're seeing fall by the wayside. They said, it's not fascism because there are no militias. So, you know, in Italy and Germany, and like take the KKK, what you had were militias roaming the streets. The KKK was a fascist organization because it was a militia that was essentially deputized, or the law enforcement looked the other way while they burned crosses, burned houses, and killed, lynched people, most, and killed people in large numbers. And so, and they were deputized by law enforcement, and like law enforcement looked the other way. What we're seeing now is militia. You know, we've seen Trump and others praise Kyle Rittenhouse. We see law enforcement look the other way or endorse these militias. We see the Republican Party, the Trump administration, call on these informal militias. And that's a deeply worrisome sign when you have...
Yeah, let me just jump in here because you put a lot there on the table and I want to pick up all of it. But let me just play a short clip. And this actually goes back to 2016. This is then candidate Donald Trump. He's at a campaign rally in Iowa. And I should say that this was part of a campaign calling for locking up Hillary Clinton. Didn't happen. Also, where the candidate said, basically, only I can fix it. But let's just listen to this very short clip from that particular event.
So if you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the crap out of them, would you? Seriously. Okay? Just knock the hell. I promise you, I will pay for the legal fees. I promise. I promise.
Jason, we're almost up on a break here, but just a quick response to that. And obviously this goes back 4 years to February 2016. But on the one hand, you've got this law and order. And on the other hand, you've got a president, or I should say a candidate, telling his supporters to beat someone up.
Fascism is lawlessness in the name of law and order. And that's what you have there. So fascism, we've seen this administration has violated every law, like almost every law in the book, and they're proclaiming that they're a law and order administration. This is the signature. Fascism is corruption in the name of anti-corruption. That's something I found surprising in my work, that all fascist campaigns are anti-corruption law and order campaigns, even though the fascists are urging militia onto the street.
Well, I want to pick up on that because that's a very provocative statement there. That's Jason Stanley, our guest on Radio Times today. He's a professor of philosophy at Yale University, author of a book that came out a couple of years ago, now out in paperback, How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. You can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with our guest Jason Stanley about a book he wrote a couple of years ago called How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. And as we were just describing, it's based on a whole series of different ideologies, including ideologies based on loyalty and victimhood, a narrative about a better past, propaganda, fear of the other, law and order, and this cult of personality when it comes to leaders. He has says and writes that fascist movements are on the rise in democracies around the world in places like Brazil and Hungary, the Philippines, he says, even here in the United States. And as he mentioned, fascism was actually an inspiration for Adolf Hitler when it came to the KKK. And he's joining us on Radio Times as we talk more about his book and what fascism is and, frankly, what fascism isn't. And you can join us. You can call us at 1-888-477-4373. 877-943-9499. Jason, we've got you back on the phone there. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Let me just pick up on what you were saying about the kind of lawlessness, that fascism is lawlessness in the name of law and order. That's chaos, isn't it?
Yes, and chaos is what we've seen in the past 4 years. We've seen laser-like focus on immigrants. We've seen, you know, the Department of Homeland Security go through all of our cities, track our fellow residents, undocumented residents, you know, in ways that are deeply reminiscent of 1930s in Germany, frankly. So we've seen that part, all sorts of methods to track and other undocumented residents. And one of my worries is that we're going to see that directed against political opponents as well.
Just to make sure our listeners and I understand. So in terms, again, you know, calling someone a fascist, like calling someone a Nazi, is a very powerful and loaded term. Are you saying that about the president, or are you saying it more about the policies coming from this White House?
I do not think that the president believes the things that, say, Adolf Hitler writes in Mein Kampf. I think he's being strategic. It's a very powerful kind of politics. I think there are members of his administration, such as Stephen Miller, who are white supremacists, who do veer towards fascist ideology. Remember, not all the Nazis are just one instance of fascism. You have the British Fascist Party. The British Fascist Party was Britain for the motto was Britain for the British. They favored a full ban on immigration. Fascist ideology is based on the nation. It's the idea that the nation is ethnically pure. You've got a great nation. It was once great, and immigrants are ruining it. Immigrants are bringing in crime. They're a threat to your children. And we need to restore the greatness of the nation back when it dominated other nations. And I think that the president shares some of this ideology, but I think he's mostly just using it strategically. It wins elections. It has always been a powerful device for winning elections. But along with the president, who I think is mostly using it for the reasons of power and to stay in power, his administration has Islamophobes, has white nationalists who are transforming the government in these ways. And, you know, at a certain point, you have to drop the question of who is a fascist in their hearts and just look at an administration. I mean, there were many members of even the Nazi Party who cared more about enriching themselves than they did about anti-Semitism. And what we have now is that.
Well, let me run an argument by you, and this is an argument that, that some have said against your book and some of what you have said, which is that the president did not use the pandemic as a way to get control of the country and to, you know, be sort of more autocratic. He basically left it to the states and kind of washed his hands of the pandemic and even sort of denied its existence. The argument being that if you're really a good authoritarian, this would be the perfect way to be to grab more power. What do you say?
Right. Excellent. So my paperback came out in late May, and I had to get the preface out by March 5th, 14th. And in the preface, I discussed COVID-19. And I had to make a prediction as to which countries would do the worst. And it was tough because, you know, it was unclear on March 14th. So I predicted the United States, Brazil, Russia, and India. And those are the countries that have done the worst. And why? Because fascism is anti-intellectual, anti-expertise, anti-science. The president couldn't really classify COVID-19. It was neither an enemy nor a friend. That's how they think. But you're either with me or against me. And we know from the documents that they started to think of COVID-19 as kind of a friend. It targeted minorities. It disproportionately targeted essential workers who are minorities, Black and Latino, and cities. It was raging in cities. as Trump said, New York City is diseased. We have to shut it down. He used COVID-19 as part of his fascist politics. So because he did that, because it wasn't, he thought, targeting his base, it was targeting cities, it was targeting minority groups, he didn't think of it as a danger. That's why we know that Jared Kushner's group, you know, heard from political strategists that it was largely focused, it was largely a danger for democratic city-run cities and states. So in Brazil, you had something similar in the sense that you had Bolsonaro, the president of Brazil, use fascist ideology to brush it aside. He said it won't social Darwinism in the case of Brazil. He said Italy is an old country. It won't affect Brazil. We are young and strong. So this idea that this social Darwinist idea that it will just take away the weak is key to the kinds of ways these leaders think. So what we had here is we had this idea that the coronavirus was only going to harm Democratic voters, Democratic cities, and those aren't real Americans.
Let me play another clip, and this is on a different subject. The president did a long interview with Fox News' Laura Ingraham earlier this week on Monday, and here he is talking with her about how the Democrats are building low-income housing in the suburbs, which could be a threat or is a threat to the women of the suburbs. Let's give it a listen.
They want low-income housing, and with that comes a lot of other problems, including crime. May not be nice to say, but
I'll say poor people are criminals, though.
No, I'm not saying that at all, but it does. There is a level of violence that you don't see. So you have this beautiful community in the suburbs, including women, right? Women, they want security. I ended where they build low-income housing project right in the middle of your neighborhood. I ended it. If Biden gets in, he already said it's going to go at a much higher rate than ever before. And you know who's going to be in charge of it? Cory Booker. That's going to be nice, okay?
Well, that is not true. We should sort of put a fine point there. But, Jason, so how do you see that, and how does that fit into what we've been talking about?
I mean, one of my questions is, does any American not understand that? I mean, any American who doesn't understand that is just pretending. So, I mean, if anyone's like, oh, no, he's being – I mean, he's being a strategic fascist. And so chapter 8 of my book is called Sexual Anxiety. It's about how the fascist leader is always – he's the strong man there to protect you against the marauding minorities. You know, in Nazi propaganda – the Jews were always there to, like, there were lots of ads about how Jews were, like, predating on children and were going after good Aryan women. We see this in India with attacks on Muslims. The Muslims are threats, are rape threats. We saw it with the Rohingya genocide, ethnic cleansing. The Rohingya were supposedly rapists and threats to your women. So what he's saying is just pure fascist propaganda there. It's you know, your women need to be protected from black people, hence Cory Booker. He's using strategic racism and strategic fascism. You know, you need a strong, manly leader to protect you from this supposed black threat to your womanhood. And this harkens back all the way to, this is American history. This is what Hitler draws from an American history, the idea that black men are threats to white women. This is lynching, the ideology behind lynching. This is, as Frederick Douglass said, no one, when white women and black men ran every plantation in the South, no one was ever raped. And suddenly there's supposed to be this epidemic of rape. So he is clearly saying, communicating, there's this threat of crime and rape, and you need, fascist politics is very gendered. It's a very patriarchal politics. Ida B. Wells points this out in her book Southern Horrors in 1892. She says, look at how this propaganda represents women as weak, as lacking in agency, and needing a strong man to protect them. And what Trump is doing is that exact propaganda.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Jason Stanley, and And we're talking about the subject of his book, which is titled How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. It's now out in paperback, written a couple of years ago. He's a philosophy professor at Yale University. And again, you can join our conversation. Any questions or comments, you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can always tweet us, and you can do that at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read a couple of comments. One from Facebook. Edward says, the true fascists are those who are doing their best to silence those they don't agree with. Republicans are those who, like Trump, aren't trying to silence people. The Democrats are. How do you see that, Jason?
So this idea that there is an overreach of people. There is an overreach on the left that I condemn just as much as anyone. Everyone should be allowed to speak, everyone. And sometimes this condemning on social media of people who issue free ideas is way too far. But the Republicans, fascist propaganda always says that blames others for doing what they are doing. I mean, we have an entire right-wing media that's devoted to getting professors fired for their social media tweets. We have Turning Point USA, whose leader Charlie Kirk at the Republican National Convention said Donald Trump is the defender of Western civilization. Why is Turning Point USA so big? Because they started a professor watch list. What was the function of the professor watch list? It was to get professors fired for their speech. There's a 1928 NSDAP Nazi Party campaign poster showing Hitler with his mouth muzzled saying Hitler is the only person on earth who is not allowed to speak. This idea that far right, that free speech is the domain of the far right, and the far right are the ones not allowed to speak, is always used by far right authoritarians. They're trying to police speech at universities to make sure speech isn't policed. Well, hey, if you're policing speech at universities, speech is being policed all over. Which is not to say there aren't threats to free speech in this country.
Sure.
But, the threats to free speech come largely from the right, also from the left, but they come largely from the right.
Well, let me get Tim to join our conversation. And Tim, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi, Tim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty. I wanted to, make a couple observations about the gentleman's points and then finish with a question.
If you don't mind just making a brief, only because I got my eyes on the watch here, my watch here, but go
certainly,
ahead.
Certainly, Marty. I would love to hear a conversation about how the left is using some of the fascist-type tactics. He spoke of political parties investigating another political party. We watched the Obama administration do that prior to the election, prior to the inauguration, using the race war with the whole Black Lives Matter becoming militaristic and, white silence is violence, demonizing a left party, the more conservative folks, that if they don't become activists, then they're somehow complicit. Calling Donald Trump's election, Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton both called the election of Donald Trump illegitimate. So I'd like to just – there was a number of aspects to his points. I'd like to see them applied to some of the actions by the left or the Democratic Party.
Sure, Tim. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I mean, it should be said that Hillary Clinton did concede. She called Donald Trump to congratulate him on winning the presidency. But Jason, what do you say? I mean, he's pushing back. He's saying, look, the Democrats do this. It's the kind of both-sidism. The Democrats do this too. True? Not true?
Right. So we have to see that. So some of the things he said I agree with and would condemn, let's not get into people's faces and yell at them for being complicit, and that's kind of authoritarian, and let's not do that. It's strategically wrong. It's morally wrong. But it's different when you are using the apparatus of the state. So, you know, we have the administration, condoning Kyle Rittenhouse's killings. You know, this is we have the administration promoting, the administration in fascism, you always blame the other side for what you're doing. So what the administration is trying to do is they're trying to say that the Obama administration illegally investigated them. Now, if that were true, that would be problematic. But we have a difference in reality here, which is happening, which happens under fascism. No one can track reality because everything is just us versus them. And fascist politics always blames the other person for what they're doing. So what they're trying to do, as they use the apparatus of the state to undermine the election, is they blame the Democrats for using the apparatus of the state for undermining elections. And so we have a factual reality disagreement. Tim, who is an honest conservative, has a different reality than I do. He believes that it's the Democrats who have done what I think facts and reality show this administration is doing, namely using the apparatus of the state to target its political opponents. So, and the, of course, this administration is going to do everything it can to try to create this fictional reality that there's a deep state that targets Trump. I think there's just a tremendous amount of evidence that there were connections between this administration and Russia, for instance, and that is a legitimate matter for the FBI to investigate. But this administration is trying to undermine reality. And so what results is we have this difference in realities.
And just to underscore that point, and we're almost up in a break here, is the Senate report recently, a Republican-led Senate report, did underscore that Russia wanted Donald Trump to win the presidency in 2016. Talking with Jason Stanley, our guest on Radio Times. He's got a book out. It's now out in paperback, How Fascism Works, the Politics of Us and Them. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and if you're just joining us, our guest is Jason Stanley. He's a philosophy professor at Yale University. We've been talking about a book he wrote just a couple of years ago, How Fascism Works, the Politics of Us and Them. You can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us, as our previous caller did, 1-888-477-9499. Jason, I want to play another clip from Laura Ingraham's interview with President Trump on Monday. She asked the question and he gives the answer, and let's listen to it and then we'll talk about it right after it.
Who do you think is pulling Biden's strings? Is it former Obama officials?
People that you've never heard of. People that are in the dark shadows, people that...
What does that mean? That sounds like conspiracy theory, dark shadows.
No, people that you haven't heard of. They're people that are on the streets. They're people that are controlling the streets. We had somebody get on a plane from a certain city this weekend. And in the plane, it was almost completely loaded with thugs wearing these dark uniforms, black uniforms with gear and this and that. They're on a plane.
Where is this?
I'll tell you sometime, but it's under investigation right now.
So, Jason, I mean, I've listened to that several times, and my jaw just drops every time. How do you see this fit into our conversation?
It's the destruction of the information space, what I was addressing in my discussion back and forth with Tim. Tim and I are both honest members of a society. I'm liberal. He's conservative. Those are legitimate positions. But in order for us to discuss and realize what we agree and disagree on, we have to have a common reality. What conspiracy theories do is destroy that common reality. They make us paranoid, and Trump has always been a purveyor of conspiracy theories, back to birtherism. More worrisomely, however, he's leaning into QAnon, and he's leaning into conspiracy theories that resemble the protocols of the Elders of Zion. This is a very familiar conspiracy theory. Henry Ford distributed 500,000 copies of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion to Americans. It sounds familiar to people. There's a dark, shadowy communist elite. They're both communists, and yet they're somehow elite. Tim Scott echoed this when he talked about Manhattan elites and Hollywood moguls in his speech. The idea is there's a shadowy elite there's a shadowy group that's trying to bring communism and socialism to America. They do it by instigating a race war. And actually, Tim actually echoed that in his comments. He suggested that Black Lives Matter was trying to instigate a race war. So this is a long-standing trope of the Ku Klux Klan, the idea that communists are trying to instigate a race war in America to take over. And they're just using Black Americans in this strategy. And Hitler said, Hitler argued this too. He argued that Judeo-Bolsheviks were behind Senegalese soldiers in the Rhineland raping German women. So the idea is, always, as I started out in my definition of fascism, the communists and the Marxists are instigating a race war to overthrow the nation.
But are you also saying that when propaganda becomes news or is repeated or retweeted by a leader in a country, then the people don't know what to believe? They lose track of what is true and what is not true.
Completely. And we've gone beyond that. And this administration is trying to reverse engineer reality. So they're trying to go back and say that it's actually the Obama administration who targeted us, not us targeting Obama and Biden. So the conspiracy theories undermine your grip on reality and make you think, well, that guy, he might be corrupt, he might be lying, but you can't believe anything. No one knows what's true. We just know who's on our side. This guy's on our side. He's our leader. Nothing else matters.
Let me play another clip. This would be number 4, Diana. I'm home. She's at the studio, so I have to. I can't make faces at her. So let's play clip number 4. And this is President Trump at a press conference. This was on Monday. Here he is not condemning the actions of Kyle Rittenhouse, and he's the 17-year-old who's been charged with murder.
Are you going to condemn the actions of vigilantes like Kyle Rittenhouse?
We're looking at all of it. That was an interesting situation. You saw the same tape as I saw. And he was trying to get away from them, I guess, it looks like. And he fell. And then they very violently attacked him. And it was something that we're looking at right now, and it's under investigation. But I guess he was in very big trouble. He probably would have been killed, but it's under investigation.
Jason, your book is subtitled Us and Them. I mean, dividing the world between us and them. And certainly, I mean, I think we all do it. And we're all very tribal in our, sort of base of psychology. But what we do see is the president really dividing protesters into us and them, the patriots and the thugs.
Yeah, so all politics is to some extent us versus them politics. Fascist politics is a very particular kind of us versus them politics. So it's the kind of politics that says we are the hardworking white, or Aryan in the case of Germany, or Hindu in the case of India. It's people who live in the countryside, and they are the lawless minorities, communist minorities. So what you saw in that clip is something Hannah Arendt discusses. She says that the Nazis, when they were in power, never explicitly condemned the street violence of their supporters. They never praised it either. They never. Hmm. They always just. She said it was a silent. It was a permissibility. It was saying you can do this. So what she says is that the Nazi government always had a relationship with the violent militias. The relationship was never officially endorsing them, but never condemning them. And that gave them permission. So she said when they were asked, they would just stay silent or speak about other things. And that tacitly gave permission. But also, the administration needs to separate itself from the violent street protesters, because in the end, when things go bad, they could say, oh, well, those are the Nazis. How can we be fascist if, you know, we're here in suits?
Let me just add something a little more personal, and I don't have a lot of detail here, but I know, Jason, both your parents were Jewish refugees. I believe they left when they were children. You also had a grandmother who helped free prisoners from a concentration camp, and she actually posed as a Nazi social worker. So this is something deeply personal to you.
It is. It's very personal. And I always grew up with parents who understood that these forces existed in the United States. My mother was a court stenographer in Manhattan Criminal Court. She was there during the Central Park Five case. She was horrified by what she saw. My mother's no liberal, but she grew up in Russia and Poland during the Holocaust and right afterwards. And she saw in what confronted Black Americans in the United States echoes of what she experienced in Europe. That didn't make her want to go out on the streets. For my mother, this is just what humans do. Humans pick a group. They say they're evil. They say they're lawless. They say they're criminals. They say they're destroying the nation. They say they're rapists. She thought she thinks that happens everywhere. And she certainly saw it in the United States in criminal court. So for me, yes, you know, I've grown up watching both political parties demonize Black Americans for political purposes. I've watched Americans sort of hive off that dehumanization. Now we're seeing it extended to immigrants, and I worry that we're going to see it extended to political opponents as well.
Let me get another caller to join our conversation. This is Eddie, and Eddie, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Do we have Eddie?
Yes. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead, Eddie.
So, Marty, the question that I had is, given what we have going on in the country and the parallels with historical fascism, what do we do at this point as citizens to be able to combat that fascism? Historically, it's taken an overwhelming amount of force to be able to combat fascism in, say, Italy and India and Germany as well. But what do you do to keep us from getting to that point?
It's a very good question, Eddie. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Jason, what do you say in response?
Oh, that's the question that Eddie is asking. So we have to reach first. We have to reach out to each other, speak across political divides so far as that's possible. Remind people of democratic norms that, you know, we are in democracy. We should be suspicious of all leaders. No one is going to save us. I'm very critical of Obama. I'm much more critical of Trump. I'm critical of all of the political. I'm critical of Biden. You know, in a democracy, you're not supposed to love your political leaders. They're supposed to, you know, save us from 180,000 people dying of a pandemic. They're supposed to be competent. We have to somehow restore democratic norms, get our grip on reality again. We need local journalism. We need our media to step up and not do both-siderism. We need our media repeatedly to do what you've done during this hour, which is when people say false things, you correct them with the record. In the Senate, bipartisan Senate subcommittee found that Russia did want Trump to win. They did interfere in various ways. So we need the media not to normalize behavior that's not normal, whether it's by Democrats or Republicans. And one thing that I think Biden is doing to help restore that is he's repeatedly talking about Republicans as legitimate political opponents that he's going to bring in and consult. and that's a democratic ethos. We can't demonize our political opponents, and we need to be prepared to go out on the street and defend the election and defend the results of the election. We need to be able to go out on the street. We need to do a much better job of making sure that people can vote. This election's already compromised by the fact that so many people do not have access to reliable means of voting. So these are all, everybody needs to get into organizations that enable them to protect the vote if that's what it comes to.
Let me read a couple of comments, and then I've got one more question for you. Cliff says, I'd always thought the comparison of Trumpism to fascism was overblown until very recently. It was the creation of a mythical, ambiguous enemy, a.k.a. Antifa, as well as the encouragement of vigilantes or militias that has made me think, hey, this guy could be an actual fascist. An email from Avi, he says, are fascists trying to promote other fascists? An email from Richard, what is the state's role with respect to the private sector? Is this different than communist societies? An email from Bernie. Maybe I misheard you, but you stated the definition of fascism sounded like it included authoritarian fear-mongering about socialists taking over, but didn't leaders of the fascist Nazi party in Germany refer to their party as the National Socialist German Workers' Party? Could you please explain? Is there a quick answer to that, Jason? I know their books have been written about that, but very quickly.
North Korea is called the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea. I mean,
right.
Everybody puts, Hitler condemns in no uncertain terms Marxism repeatedly throughout Mein Kampf. I mean, on the Holocaust Museum, on the side of the Holocaust Museum, there's a poem saying, first they came for the socialists. So anyone who thinks Hitler was anti-socialist needs to go to the Holocaust Museum and look at the side of the Holocaust Museum where it says, first they came for the socialists.
One of the things you say in your book is, and I think we sort of have come, having talked to you, that fascism is easy while democracy is hard.
Yes, fascism is easy because fascism says, we want someone who just, we want a strong leader who doesn't listen to other people, who just imposes his will. We want a CEO, a businessman who smashes Congress, who just, a strong leader. Whereas democracy, and it's easy to go. I mean, my 5-year-old wants his way. When my 5-year-old doesn't get his way, he throws a temper tantrum. Fascism is 5-year-old leadership. I'm going to get my way. It's my way or the highway. And people want a 5-year-old to be in charge of the country. Democracy is doing what, I'm not a huge fan of Joe Biden, but democracy is doing what he's doing. It's saying Republicans have views too. We need to listen to them. We need to listen to socialists. We need to listen to social conservatives, libertarians, because the problems are hard. Some problems have free market solutions. Others don't. We need to listen to all different kinds of viewpoints. And what fascist politics does is it represents that as weakness. It represents compromise as weakness. It represents democracy as weakness and corruption. And it represents strength and purity as just holding to your guns no matter what. But a 5-year-old holds their guns no matter what.
We're almost out of time here. Much has been said, we're at this critical juncture. But do you think we're at this critical juncture in this country?
I think we're at a. I think that we're not. Things went much more quickly in a country like Germany. They went much more slowly in Italy. France had fascist movements that were beaten back in the 30s. We've had fascists. We've had George Wallace. We've had we've had the America First movement in the 1930s. We've had the KKK. We've had these movements before. We've beaten them back. Our institutions. We do have institutions. We have loyal. We have Republicans loyal to these institutions, Democrats loyal to these institutions, and I think this kind of cult of the leader can be beaten back, I believe, in America.
Jason Stanley, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's a philosophy professor at Yale University, and his book is titled How Fascism Works. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for calling, and thanks for joining the conversation as well.